What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Emil Hirsch, rabbi of Stephen Wise Free Synagogue of New York, and the organizer of the recent Recharging Reform Judaism Conference. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. We are now in the very last week of the Jewish year 5783. Rosh Hashanah begins this Friday night at sundown. It's time to look back on the year we've experienced, see how we've acted towards others, and how we might improve our attitude and conduct in the new year of 5784 that's coming up. To help with that process, my brilliant wife Sophie asked the great source of all wisdom these days, ChatGPT, to come up with an appropriate message for Rosh Hashanah. And here it is. Provided with the helpful note from ChatGPT, feel free to personalize this to your own needs. Shana Tova, dear community. As we gather on this sacred day of Rosh Hashanah, we come together to celebrate the beginning of the new year. Rosh Hashanah marks not only the start of a new calendar year, but also a spiritual journey of reflection, repentance, and renewal. The shofar, its haunting sound echoing through generations, calls us to awaken from our spiritual slumber. It beckons us to take stock of the past year, to acknowledge our shortcomings, and to embrace the opportunity for growth and transformation. In the Torah, we read of the binding of Isaac, a story of sacrifice and faith. It reminds us that our faith can be tested, but it is also a source of strength that guides us through life's challenges. Just as Isaac emerged from that test unharmed, we too can emerge from our trials stronger and wiser. As we partake in the Rosh Hashanah traditions of apples and honey, let them symbolize the sweetness we hope to find in the year ahead, despite life's inevitable challenges. May we approach the coming year with the optimism that even in the face of adversity, we can find moments of joy, gratitude, and growth. Let us remember that tshuva, repentance, is always within our grasp. Our tradition teaches that God is merciful and forgiving. We have the power to mend broken relationships, seek forgiveness from others, and make amends for our actions. As we gather with loved ones, both in person and in spirit, let us reflect on the blessings of community and family. In these challenging times, our connections with one another are more vital than ever. Let us support and uplift each other as we navigate the uncertainties of the year ahead. May this Rosh Hashanah be a time of profound spiritual renewal, a time to set intentions for personal growth, a time to recommit to the values that define us as individuals and as a community. Shana Tova Umetuka. May you have a good and sweet year filled with blessings, love, and peace. Okay, as Sophie says, that message from ChatGPT for Rosh Hashanah is a little anodyne. That is, a truly generic message, something quite banal. But you could make a pretty good case that most Rosh Hashanah messages are no better than this. In fact, I've heard rabbis' sermons that were worse. A fair number, to be honest. Now, I promise I will not do my own High Holy Day sermons using ChatGPT, although I will likely reference it somewhere over the holidays. But certainly, Rabbi ChatGPT hits all the typical notes, like a shofar blowing tekiah shevarim teruah. Sorry, clearly been influenced by that bot. Well, here's another example of its influence. I'm beginning to see the way that some of us treat our Judaism kind of like ChatGPT. That is, we go to services on the High Holy Days or watch them on Facebook these days and can get a full generic Jewish experience without any involvement. You know, good enough, right? Without actually putting out any real creativity or effort. Or we don't even attend services, relying on a family meal with a couple of Jewish elements. You know, apples and honey, maybe a nice Jewish brisket to connect us to our heritage. So here's my own non-ChatGPT influence message for Rosh Hashanah 5784. Try to make this a year in which you renew your own Jewish life in a new and meaningful way. Do something Jewish you haven't done before, or at least in a long time. Learn a new Jewish subject. Push yourself a little in your Jewish identity. I promise it will bring unexpected and wonderful rewards. To play us in this last Sunday morning of 5783, here's a preview of High Holy Days music, a setting by my own father, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, for Uva Shofar Gadol, sung with his youth choir, now re-released.
Uva Shofar Gadol, Itaka, Lekodem Babadaka, Yishama. Uma Lachim Yehavezu,
was my dad, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, singing Uva Shofar Gadol from the morning service for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Join us at Beit Simcha this Friday night for Rosh Hashanah services at 6:30 p.m. Rosh Hashanah morning services and youth programming are Saturday at 9:30 a.m. Tashlich family picnic at Columbus Park Lake at 4:30 p.m. All of our services are also available on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson. Our guest on Two Jewish this morning, Rabbi Amiel Hirsch, is concerned with the direction of Reform Judaism in America, and he's doing something about it. The rabbi of Stephen Wise Free Synagogue in Manhattan is the organizer of the Recharging Reform Judaism Conference. He joins us in just a moment on Two Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
This Is Judaism offers everything you ever wanted to know about Judaism, but were afraid to ask. Who is Abraham? What is the Torah? How long have Jews been around? What do Jews believe about life after death? In three fun, inexpensive, informative sessions, This Is Judaism brings you the joy of Jewish life and learning. You'll study with Rabbi Sam Kohan and learn what Jewish values, spirituality, and community are all about. Plus, you can get a sample of delicious Jewish foods. Classes are at the Tucson JCC, the J, and are open to everyone, Jewish or not. Best of all, This Is Judaism is completely free. but the learning is invaluable. Want to know what your new Jewish relatives are all about? Want your kids to understand Jewish heritage, history, and holidays? Want to try some delicious Jewish food? Then This Is Judaism is for you. There's no charge, but you must pre-register by calling 520-276-5675. Visit BeitSimchaTucson.org or email rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org. This Is Judaism is taught on three consecutive Sunday afternoons in September and October at the Tucson JCC. There's a free Zoom option, but registration is required. All classes are with Rabbi Sam Kohan. Remember, there's no obligation and registration is completely free for this wonderful introduction to Jewish life. Register for This Is Judaism by calling 520-276-5675. It's the most effective introduction to Jewish learning and life ever. For your very own entry or return to Judaism, visit BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675.
We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish, a friend of long standing. I know you're not supposed to say old friend when you get to a certain age. So Rabbi Amiel Hirsch is the rabbi of Stephen Wise Free Synagogue in New York, and he created and led a program called the Recharging Reform Judaism Conference this year. Former head of the Reform Zionist Association. Ami, welcome.
Oh, Rabbi Kohan, Sam, it is such a pleasure to be on with you and to dialogue with you. It's been a long time.
It has, and our families go back a really long time. So I want to talk about what prompted you to start this Recharging Reform Judaism movement.
Well, we dedicated the conference to three issues that we thought were paramount to the future of American Judaism, but for sure to the future of liberal Judaism, of which we are a strong part in the Reform movement. One was our perception that liberal Jews and elements of the movement itself were distancing from the concept of Jewish peoplehood, which in turn leads to a distancing from the state of Israel. And then thirdly, we felt that in particular in the light of the pandemic, that synagogues were struggling to bring people back, and that in any case, we needed some kind of recharging and re-energizing of the not only spiritual ideas, but how we communicate them and how we convey, religiosity in the 21st century. So we devoted the Recharging Conference to those three issues: a distancing from Israel, a distancing from the centrality of Jewish peoplehood, and a recharging of our religious and spiritual vocabulary and ideas.
So all of these trends have been, certainly had been in progress long before the COVID pandemic struck. They were accentuated by it, I think, each of them. Let's take this sort of piece by piece. Most of the surveys of attitudes among American Jews towards Israel show a dramatic demographic difference. People of our generation or older generations tend to be much more strongly pro-Israel, deeply involved, love Israel. Younger generations increasingly, or I should say decreasingly, are associated with Israel. What do you attribute that to?
First of all, I think those numbers are largely right. Not only in terms of our intuitive understanding based on our experience of interacting with people, but consistently the surveys are showing that, so I assume those numbers to be right. I think the reasons for that are very complicated, some of which I think I may have some grasp over, but much of which I don't feel as if I have a firm grasp over it, nor do I think that most of us do.
We will talk much more with Rabbi Amiel Hirsch about the whole process of trying to renovate Reform Judaism and maybe some solutions as well when we come back in a moment here on Two Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in Northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a wonderful array of services, classes, and events this autumn. Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. A progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. You can find out about all of our services, classes, and more. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimcha Tucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. And of course, come to our services on Facebook on our Facebook page too. Call 520-276-5675. It's time to have kids in Hebrew school and religious school. Religious school registration's going, and school is too. For school-age children or grandchildren, not too late to start the year. Join us for Hebrew school, bar and bat mitzvah programs, Torah tikes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting of great Jewish learning. Beit Simcha's services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Come every Friday night, Saturday morning. You can email me directly, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, or join us in person, 6:30 p.m. Friday nights, Saturday, typically 10 a.m. for Shabbat services, 9 a.m. Torah study precedes them, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. All of our many Adult Education Academy classes are available live and on Zoom. Access those through our website, beitsimchatucson.org. The High Holy Days are almost here. Join us for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Beginning this Friday and Saturday, September 15th and 16th, guests are welcome. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. For more information about Beit Simcha, to attend services, High Holy Days, our great religious school and Torah text programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of adult education academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and of course all of our services in person and on our Facebook page, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org. BeitSimcha Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation community in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, streaming us from there, TooJewishRadio.com, or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, 200,000 downloads on Podbean, and on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review Too Jewish wherever you listen to us. All those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470 To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We were talking last week about a really interesting area that's essentially unknown here in the West, I think. And I don't just mean the Southwest. I mean
the Western Hemisphere.
The Western world, the Western Hemisphere, certainly, which is, you were mentioning it, kind of the stands, right? The area of Turkic influence, primarily some Persian influence, in which Jewish communities grew up. And there were, at one point, there was even supposedly a Jewish empire there. The Khazar kingdom is sort of in that general direction.
Yeah, Khazaria, we talked about a long time ago, but let me correct an omission from last week, which is technically there are two more stands, Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Yeah.
But those were, neither one was ever part of the Soviet Union, although the Soviets occupied Afghanistan.
They surely did.
For a while. And, you know, it's not for nothing that Afghanistan is called the graveyard of empires.
Yeah.
Because that, theoretically, the endless procession of coffins going back to Moscow from the war in Afghanistan is what caused the march of 600,000 women in Moscow that brought down the former Soviet Union.
Yeah. By the way, not the first empire to fall because of Afghanistan.
Right.
You know, Alexander couldn't get a, take a, Alexander the Great, and on and on and on, and the British Empire. So right. Many examples. All right. So the Jewish communities, we talked originally about a news story that showed there was a synagogue on the shore of the Black Sea in Second Temple times.
Right.
We know that the Jewish community there is ancient, goes back probably before that to Greek times. The question is, how did those Jewish communities develop that still exist, at least in some form, in what to us is a very remote area?
Right. Okay, so at the end of our last session, I was about to make the point that the Mongols, and particularly the founder of the Mongol Empire, Timur.
Yeah. Oh, Timur, right.
So they were surprisingly advanced and tolerant. They had universal free education for kids under 16. They created the first equivalent to a passport. They created the first equivalent to a credit card. And from all the cities that they conquered in an area ranging from what is today Vietnam to Poland, and on the other side, what is today the Korean Peninsula to the Sinai Peninsula, I mean, it's a huge area.
Enormous, yep.
They brought back academics and spiritual leaders and whatever to their capital, and they created great academies and free thinkers and debates, and there was essentially freedom of religion.
Right.
You know, the religion was like a competitive marketplace. So throughout this vast realm, there was a period when many established religions, like Judaism and Christianity, could freely make converts. And so one small kingdom within this vast landmass was the kingdom of the Khazars. And they, as a whole kingdom, officially became Jewish, the same way that Georgia and Armenia officially became Christian in the 4th century. But the bulk of the Jewish communities in this area were communities that grew up along the Silk Route, involved doing business and trading and Jewish merchants who could write to each other in Hebrew and whatever. There were like all kinds of reasons that this chain of Jewish communities going essentially from Europe, whether Turkey or Italy or whatever.
Supposedly started with Spain went all the way. There's the famous letters of Khasta ibn Shaprut, who was writing to the king of the Khazars in the 9th century.
Yeah, but it goes further east than that.
Yeah, no, it goes all the way.
Silk Route goes all the way to at least Xi'an.
Yeah.
Which the old part of Xi'an feels like a Middle Eastern city. It feels like, you know, the old city of Jerusalem, these narrow shopping streets, bazaars, whatever. So I think Jewish communities in this region sprung up at different times and for different reasons. A big part of it has to do with the Silk Route that existed for a very long time and no longer really exists. But there are still lively Jewish communities, and with numerous representatives in both Israel and the United States in places like Bukhara and Samarkand, whatever. These are not communities that have disappeared either in their homelands or in their exile, much of which is a result of the Soviets.
It's really fascinating. Tom, thanks for a full view of a very complicated and huge and interesting region and its Jewish origins. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
L'shana tova, a good year and a healthy year.
Also to you.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Morris walks into a deli and notices a large sign on the wall. $1,000 if we can't fill your order. When the waitress arrives, he orders an elephant ear on a bagel. She calmly writes down the order and walks into the kitchen, where all hell breaks loose. Noise, shouting, yelling. Finally, the deli owner comes out storming from the kitchen. He runs to the customer's table, slaps $1,000 in cash on it and says, "You got me this time, but I want you to know, that's the first time in 10 years that we've been out of bagels." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. Last one of this year. And now a word of Torah. This week we read a special Rosh Hashanah portion, the great and terrible story of the binding of Isaac, the Akedah. God tests Abraham by having him almost, but not quite, sacrifice his beloved son Isaac on a rock. Read on the first day of Rosh Hashanah by Reform Jews and the second day by Conservative and Orthodox Jews, its connection to Rosh Hashanah would seem to be the fact that a ram appears at the end of the story, caught in the thicket by its horns, the model for all future shofarot, the shofars we blow on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah, among its many names, boasts Yom Teruah, the day of the sounding of the shofar, the ram's horn. But this passage, taken from the Torah portion of Vayera in Genesis, Breshit, is much more than a mere animal story. Cryptic, yet oddly repetitive, it raises a host of painful moral dilemmas, challenging us to think intensely about just what our relationship to God truly is. According to the text, God tests Abraham, Adonai Nisayet Avram, by commanding him to sacrifice his son, his only son, his beloved son Isaac. This triple identification of Isaac mirrors an earlier command in the Torah portion of Lech Lecha to Avram to begin his great journey towards God and monotheism. Leave. Leave your land, your birthplace, your father's home. Now he is being told to kill his son, his only beloved son. There are problems in the text here. Abraham actually has another son, Ishmael. Isaac is not truly his only son. And Isaac is the son of his older age with his wife Sarah, so Isaac is Sarah's only son. But clearly all God needs to say here is, take your son Isaac. There'll be no doubt who's intended for the sacrificial altar. The biggest problem of all in this reading is the simple fact that Abraham, who has previously shown a tendency to argue and fight injustice, obeys and does so in this case with apparent relish. He doesn't make a peep, no single word of objection to God. In fact, he gets up early in the morning to fulfill this horrible command with energy. The narrative itself sets the drama beautifully, painfully, tragically. Isaac, who doesn't know what's happening, goes along with his father. The phrase, "the two walked on together," is repeated, "Vayechu shnehem yachdav," and Isaac asks, "Where is the lamb for the burnt offering, finally?" Abraham replies, correctly but ironically, "God will provide." It's a weird and troubling scene. And then, as Abraham's about to slaughter his son, an angel of God intervenes, and the murder of this innocent, the sacrifice of Isaac, is stopped. Isaac lives, and the future of our people, Abraham's children, is preserved. The story in its place and time was undoubtedly a polemical tale designed to teach the prohibition on human sacrifice. Children are not meant to be slaughtered on the altar of their parents' beliefs. God does not want the blood of a human lamb. Our Lord does not truly desire the destruction of God's own children. God desires life. Other religions have carried this Akedah story to a different, bloodier, more horrible conclusion, believing human sacrifice and suffering are essential elements for religious life. But the story of the Binding of Isaac makes it clear that killing our own kids and the glorification of the loss of a child will never be acceptable to Jews. Abraham's urgent rush to fulfill God's strange and wrong command to kill his son reminds us that we can embrace morally bad decisions with fervor. And many times in human history, we have sent our children off to die for causes that were, well, wrong. The great World War I poet Wilfred Owen paraphrased this theme in his piece, The Parable of the Old Man and the Young. So Abram rose and clave the wood and went and took the fire with him and a knife. And as they sojourned, both of them together, Isaac, the firstborn, spake and said, My father, behold the preparations, fire and iron, but where the lamb for this burnt offering? Then Abram bounded the youth with belts and straps and builded parapets and trenches there and stretched forth the knife to slay his son. When lo, an angel called him out of heaven, saying, Lay not thy hand upon the lad, neither do anything to him, thy son. Behold, caught in a thicket by its horns a ram. Offer the ram of pride instead. But the old man would not do so, but slew his son and half the seed of Europe, one by one. Well, as in Wilfred Owen's time, we still engage in such choices. Like Abraham, we still fail the test too often. In this coming year of 5784, may we learn from this test of Abraham's to choose life and not sacrifice for our own children. May you and your family be blessed with a healthy, successful new year of 5784. Shana Tova Tikatevu Vitecha Temu. When we return in a moment on To Jewish, our guest this morning, Rabbi Amiel Hirsch, tells us the three challenges facing Reform Judaism today and begins to delineate some answers. Find out what they are when we return in a moment on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Jack Lew, former Secretary of the Treasury, White House Chief of Staff, and head of the Office of Management and Budget, and an Orthodox Jew, was appointed last week as the new ambassador to Israel by President Joe Biden. Jacob Lew is known for his genial workmanlike style. It's earned him many admirers across the aisle and few, if any, enemies in Washington. In a town of colossal egos, Lew is known as a self-effacing, coolly efficient manager of policy, without the sharp edges that have become increasingly common in politics. He replaces Tom Nides, who resigned this summer to return to his family, who had remained in the U.S. during his ambassadorial tenure in Jerusalem. Lew is currently a managing partner at Lindsay Goldberg, a private equity firm, and a visiting professor at Columbia University, an Orthodox Jew. He belongs to the Hebrew Institute of Riverdale in New York. Lew assumes the post at a delicate time for U.S.-Israel relations. Biden and Netanyahu are at odds over Netanyahu's assault on the Israeli judiciary and nuclear issues with Iran. In addition, the Biden administration has been working on normalization of relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia, two U.S. allies with rather different views on the Palestinians, even as the two have moved closer over concerns about Iran. Lew is a true statesman and a passionate Jew, former Israeli ambassador to the U.S. under Netanyahu, Michael Oren, also a past guest of Two Jewish, wrote, As Israel's ambassador to the U.S., I greatly valued his friendship, his outstanding defense of the U.S.-Israel alliance, a mensch in every sense of the word. The New York Mets held Jewish Community Appreciation Day at the new Shea Stadium last week, complete with Matisyahu throwing out the first pitch, which he did with a matzo ball taken from a big bowl of chicken soup that he theatrically drank from and gave some to his kids both before and after throwing an extremely wide toss in the general direction of home plate. We now know that the rapper and hip-hop artist Matisyahu is left-handed. Although with that level of accuracy, he won't be much help to the most disappointing Mets team in years. These ethnic appreciation days have proliferated in Major League Baseball in recent years. All kinds of shtick gets associated with them. Along with Havanagila being played to hype up the crowd, they are a fun way to connect fans during a very long baseball season. I just wish more ballparks offered kosher hot dogs.
You're a jerk and you won't let me have a mojito bar.
That's why we fought the Nazis.
Is this a bad time?
So you can have a mojito bar.
There's a new Adam Sandler movie out on Netflix called You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah. It stars Sandler's own daughter, Sunny Sandler, who is very good in a lead role in the film, as is her older sister, Sadie, and it captures some of the insanity of being 12 years old going on 13, the friendships that seem eternal and break and must be rebuilt. It's well made, and being an Adam Sandler movie, it ends sweetly. It's certainly focused on Jewish themes, but I'm not sure the plaudits it's receiving are fully deserved. Based on a popular Fiona Rosenblum YA book, You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah is mostly enjoyable, even for, you know, adults. But while various aspects of the actual learning and religious experience of Bar Bat Mitzvah are incorporated as primarily comic relief, the focus of most of the energy is on the party, which is always super elaborate in this film. I know that for families in Westchester County, New York, and Great Neck, Long Island, and Short Hills, New Jersey, and in Beverly Hills and Pacific Palisades, California, where the Sandlers actually live and belong to my friend Chaim Frankel's synagogue, and where I happened to be present for the older sister Sadie's bat mitzvah rehearsal, don't ask, the parties are frankly insane and have been so for many years. And the core of the movie is really about relationships, growing up, learning. The movie captures some really good elements of all of that. But the wretched excess embodied in the celebrations in You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah is a little much, even for an essentially comedic film about coming of age. Look, way back when I was 23 years old and working as an assistant cantor in Los Angeles, not even Beverly Hills technically, the synagogue was just south of Olympic Boulevard, I co-officiated in an afternoon bat mitzvah for the daughter of a prominent builder. It was followed by a bat mitzvah party held at the Polo Lounge of the Beverly Hills Hotel. Each of the floral centerpieces there were worth more than my annual salary, and the tiny little bat mitzvah girl changed into different designer dresses between every course. That was 40 years ago, so things have probably gotten more, not less, out of control in these super affluent regions. I can also recall that in Tucson, Arizona, where I live and work, and where things are so much more down to earth, I attended a bar mitzvah party at a country club once where the actual Phoenix Suns dancers were imported to add flash and dash to the reception. So this new bat mitzvah film isn't putting anything in that isn't happening. Reports from Adam Sandler's own daughter's benot mitzvah match expectations. Apparently, Adam Levine of Maroon 5 dropped by an older kid's party to sing a few tunes, while the younger one's party included an A-list of celebrities that puts the Oscars to shame. Adam Sandler is not only a wildly successful, prolific, and much-loved Jewish comedic actor and producer, but by all accounts, he's an incredibly nice, menschy guy. Good for him. I'm just not sure that it'll be terribly easy for people to relate to what appear to be super rich families throwing insane celebrations for 13-year-olds. I have to give them credit, though. This movie is actually filled with Jewish actors playing Jewish characters, not just Sandler's family. Unlike so many other movies and TV shows today in which Jewish roles are routinely given to non-Jewish actors. Shockingly, the Jewish actors all do a fine job here, including, well, especially the kids. Amazing. You mean you can find Jews to play Jews on the screen? Who would have thought it? So if you have Netflix, watch the movie and let us know what you think. toojewishradio18@gmail.com, toojewishradio18@gmail. It's trending on all the social media platforms now. I hope that's good. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation, known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Rabbi Amiel Hirsch, is the rabbi of Stephen, senior rabbi, super senior rabbi, I don't know, what do we get called at a certain point, of Stephen Wise Free Synagogue in New York. He was the motivating factor behind Recharging Reform Judaism, a conference held earlier this summer, and with, I think, a whole movement of potential behind it. We talked a little bit about the distancing of American Jews, particularly younger generations, from Israel and some of the causes for that. Let's turn to the concept of Jewish peoplehood, which has been central even when Jews didn't believe in God. They felt they were Jews. Even when Jews weren't necessarily too crazy about Torah, boy, did they understand they were part of the peoplehood of Jews. Why are those ties loosening so much now?
Well, here too, I think, you know, there's, to the extent that there's a dilution of Jewish identity, that element is also going to be diluted. But remember, it's very hard when you're living in a Jewish state, for example, you're surrounded by everything that is connected with the peoplehood of the Jewish, of Jewish civilization. When you are living outside of Israel, in particular in the enlightened West, that places primary emphasis on universal values, to a certain degree, that dilutes the loyalty and the focus that we have on Jewish, what we call Jewish particularism, that is the specific particular Jewish community. And to another degree, in some quarters of intellectual liberal circles, not only does the emphasis on Jewish universalism dilute the loyalty to Jewish peoplehood, it actually denigrates Jewish peoplehood. It considers Jewish peoplehood, that is, particularistic values, tribal, pre-modern, somewhat primitive, and a previous development, historical development, that modern enlightened people need to overcome in order to reach universal brotherhood and peace. This, of course, is directly contrary to 3,000 years of Jewish tradition, which, and the glory of Judaism, the genius of Judaism, is that it found a way to blend both universal and particular values. In other words, Judaism is not a denigration of universal values that, in favor of we care only about fellow Jews. We know that from the very beginning of Judaism, from the very first words of Judaism, the first words of God to the first Jew, Abraham, were, I have made of you a great nation, I will bless you, and all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves through you. And so, from the very beginning, the Jewish task was to be a blessing to all humanity. And we're approaching the High Holy Days. Many Jews remember that famous, you know, Book of Jonah, where the whole point was that here was this Hebrew prophet who was called to preach justice to the broader Jewish world, the non-Jewish world. He tried to escape that, but the upshot of the book is he couldn't. That is, this is the task of the Jews. This is the reason for the selection of the Jews. As God says later in the book of Genesis, I have selected Abraham to do what is just and right. And for that reason, I can't hide from him what I'm about to do to the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. So from the outset, Judaism was always this blend of what we now call universal values, that is often encapsulated by this phrase, tikkun olam, and rooted in Jewish particularism. If we dilute one of those two elements, what we end up with is something else, something other than Judaism. That is, a Judaism that is primarily universal, that cares only about the world at large and cares little or nothing about fellow Jews, is a distortion of Judaism, as is a Judaism, and we have Jews in all quarters, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
As is a Judaism that says, I only care about fellow Jews, and what do I care about the world at large?
The, you know, I remember having an assistant rabbi some years ago, a long time ago, and he said, well, I don't know anything about Yiddish. Nobody in my generation knows anything about Yiddish. And I thought, well, yeah, that's kind of true. That doesn't mean you aren't part of a people for whom this was important, and for some Jews it is still important. There's a lot of different elements that go into peoplehood, and it's really hard to define, isn't it, for younger people?
It is. It is. Although, you know, we kind of know it when we see it.
Yeah.
And this is one aspect, not necessarily, as we talked about before, the only aspect, but it's one aspect with respect to the Israel-diaspora relationship, and what the recharging conference was especially concerned about. And by the way, I would add, we were extraordinarily surprised and pleased that 300 people showed up for this conference. That was, you know, it wasn't brought together by any formal group.
It wasn't under the official auspices of the URJ, was it?
No, it wasn't under anybody's official auspices. It was a group of people who came together who sensed that we were losing something vital and important about Reform Judaism. So, and there were about 220 or 230 Reform rabbis and about 70 or perhaps close to 100 Reform lay leaders as well, presidents of synagogues and other components. And one of the things we were worried about, which brought people to want to express their concerns in the first place, is this concept of tikkun olam, which is so prominent now in Reform vocabulary and in our actions, both on a synagogue level as well as a communal level. Rightly, we care about tikkun olam, which we loosely describe as repair of the world, and it is a central Jewish concept, as I indicated before. But one of the things we've been concerned about is tikkun olam only makes sense if it's rooted in what we call in Hebrew Klal Yisrael, the centrality of Jewish peoplehood. And these prophetic values that drive tikkun olam, they're grounded in loyalty to the Jewish people. Every single ancient Israelite Hebrew prophet who spoke about justice and peace and righteousness and ethics and concern for the poor and the hungry and the weak and the widow, every single one of them mentioned and assumed a context of loyalty to the Jewish people. And so there again, if we dilute one element or the other element of these two fundamental components of Judaism that constitute much of the genius of Judaism and its unique contributions to the world, then we distort Judaism, which needs to find an accommodation between both these very important sets of values, and inherent in sustaining both lies the tension of Jewish life.
I want to thank Rabbi Amiel Hirsch for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about recharging Reform Judaism and some of the ideas from the conference?
You can go up to our website, the Stephen Wise Free Synagogue, and there is a, I think it's www.swfs.org, and you can you'll see right there a link to the Recharging Conference, or you can simply Google Recharging Reform Judaism, and that'll take you to a link as well.
Ami, thank you so much for a great visit here on Too Jewish, and L'Shana Tova, a good, healthy, sweet new year.
Thank you to you too, and to your family, and Shana Tova to all of your listeners.
Thank you. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Professor Harvey Clare of Emory University. His new article, Oppenheimer Was a Communist, appears in the September issue of Commentary. Join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page. But especially, join us this Friday night for High Holy Day services at Beit Simcha, 12111 North Lachoya Road for Rosh Hashanah, September 15th, Saturday, September 16th, and Yom Kippur Sunday night, September 24th, and Monday, September 25th, all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and our Beit Simcha musicians. Play us out for the last time in the Jewish year of 5783. Here are the Maccabees singing This Is the New Year with apologies to a great big world. My friends, L'Shana Tova, Tika Tevu V'Techa Temu. May you be written and sealed in the Book of Life for a good, sweet new year. And of course, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
Another year you made a promise, another chance to turn it all around. Do not save this for tomorrow. Embrace the past day you can live for now. In awe, I will give the world to you. Speak louder than the words before you and give them. No one else is bound. The role we play is so
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.